The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Most listeners will know the Reverend Richard Coles as the high-profile clergyman who appeared on Strictly Come Dancing, or from his time with, of course, the 80s band The Communards. But Richard has just released a personal book that recounts the madness of grief he has felt since losing his partner of 12 years, David Oldham, in December 2019. Good morning to you, Richard.
Hi, Brendan.
How are you doing? It's Damien here for Brendan today, Richard. And thanks for joining us. No, you're fine. It's Easter and all of that. You've just come off the air yourself.
Yeah, I've just come off the air in this weird little hammock between Good Friday and Easter Day tomorrow. So I'm my strange double life of being on the one hand a parish priest and on the other hand a broadcaster. So you've caught me between the two.
Well, you're not the first. There's a man here called Father Brian Darcy, whom I'm sure you're aware of as well, who does something like that and has done brilliantly for the last number of years. You've suffered terrible grief over the last, it will be now 14, 15 months. It was December 2019. Tell us a little bit more about David.
David and I, we've been together for 12 years. He was also ordained. He was a medic before that. But he was also, he had a problem with alcohol. He was addicted to alcohol. And over the years, that became more and more difficult. And that began to have a kind of big health effect. And then just before Christmas 2019, he had to go into hospital, but he had a massive internal bleed when he was there. So I went in with him thinking it would just be another admission and the usual sort of treatment, and I came out a widower. And that's really when I started writing the book, because being a widower, even though as a priest and I've walked beside other people going through that many, many times, when it happens to you, it's just completely unforeseen. A bomb goes off, and then you have to sort of deal with living in the centre of this explosion as your life goes all over the place. And I just wanted to write down what was happening as a way of trying to hang on to it.
Mm. As you say there, you're used to dealing with death, but did it prepare you at all for, dealing with David's passing?
Well, in a sense it does, in that I know what happened. So I know the form, I know who you have to call, I know what a coroner's officer does in England, and I know about registering deaths and things. And so I kind of had the pattern of what was going to happen in front of me. But it was me who was completely unprepared for it. I mean, I'd just seen David die. I knew he wouldn't make old bones, but the fact of his death came as a total shock, and I was mad. So, I mean, I call it the madness of grief, because I think in its first rush, it is like being mad. So I was doing crazy. I went to the supermarket the day David died. I had to get milk and bread because I'd been with him in hospital for 4 days. And I came out and looked at my shopping bag and I bought 3 kinds of Parmesan. I took the dogs for a walk and then came home and realised I hadn't actually brought the dogs back with me, so I had to go and pick them up. So I was doing crazy things. And I think that's... And I think what I wanted from other widows who were really forthcoming and very supportive and great with their help, just tell me what it's like. I don't want to have some kind of whole elaborate kind of self-help process. I just really need to know how I'm going to get through this next bit.
And Richard, David was very young. He, not to put too fine a point on it, he must have had a really terrible problem with the drink, did he?
He did. I mean, he was really out of control. I mean, he'd always been a bit of a drinker, but sort of being a bit of a drinker in your 20s becomes more serious when you're in your 30s. And by the time he got to his 40s, his drinking had been out of control for a while. And I lived with someone who was in the grip of a terrible addiction. And the demon drink seems like rather a melodramatic way of describing it, but
okay. Yeah, sorry, you broke up there a little bit. There was as if you were typing in a number into your phone there. That's the beeps that came across. But just go back there. You were saying about David, by the time he got to his 40s, it became a real problem.
Yeah, it became unmanageable. And as anyone who has ever loved someone and lived with someone in the grip of alcohol, their life gets very chaotic. And it was all I could do sometimes just to try to keep things together. But I did. And we loved each other, and that endured, even though living together was sometimes really difficult, especially because we're both ordained and we're supposed to look like our lives are perfect. And, of course, no one's life is perfect.
No, but was it extra difficult because you were so publicly known that when you were both maybe out at a function together that, you were looking over your shoulder at what might be happening with David?
At first, yes. And then very quickly you realise that there's nothing you can do about the other person's behaviour. And actually, most people are kind of tolerant and understanding. And there were a couple of occasions when David's drinking was very much on display. And I suppose it could have been very embarrassing for me. But I refused to be embarrassed by it because I knew it wasn't my responsibility. And my job was just to love David and to be as supportive to him as I could. Although that took a while. I mean, at first, the most difficult thing was I was so angry with him because I couldn't understand why he was doing this thing to himself that was destroying him and destroying us. And that took a while for me to understand that this wasn't something he was trying to do at all. He was in the grip of something that he couldn't control.
Now you're dealing with the grief, and you say that obviously writing things down and then obviously, you know, publishing a book is part of the grieving process. But what about carrying guilt? You know, because you did have a tempestuous relationship nearly, you know, as you said, you were trying to deal with his problems and sometimes things would get heated, but love was always there until his dying moment when he, on his way into the theatre, he said, "I love you, but I may not come out of this alive." And that was it. I mean, it's so poignant in the book, that parting, as it were. But was there a sense of relief as well? Does that permeate over the last 12 months or so?
Yeah, I think anyone who's had someone with a chronic illness that's very debilitating feels this, and you feel it with guilt, of course, but you have this immense sense of relief that I could do things I hadn't been able to do before, like kind of sleep at night and eat what I wanted to do. Watch the football, because David was not a sports fan. I'm a big sports fan. And I found one. And also, he didn't like Indian takeaway. And one night, I sat and watched Match of the Day and had an Indian takeaway and sort of gurgled with pleasure. And that gurgle all of a sudden stopped because I thought, oh, my God, it's so disloyal to him. But, I mean, that was simply just coming out of having to, you know, live our lives in a way that tried to contain and hold what was happening to him. And, of course, anyone, if you love someone and you live with someone who dies of an addiction, it's very difficult to keep at bay guilty thoughts because you're constantly thinking, could I have done something different? Could I have said something different? Could I have been more loving? Those are questions that can't be answered, of course. And actually what you can't do is control someone's drinking. So you just have to find a way of living with it.
Well, yeah, that's one way of actually looking at it, and maybe people listening to us would agree, and some others may not agree with you on that. But interesting there in the book, you talk about your love of watching Match of the Day. David, not so much, but you would trade him two ugly Bettys for a Match of the Day.
Yeah, I like zombie movies, which he hated, so but I used to have to give him two Legally Blondes for one Train to Busan. So we did work out a way of living together. I mean, you know, every couple works out a way of living together, and life gets very tough for people in all sorts of ways. And I wouldn't want, you know, lots of people find living with someone who's an addict unbearable and find that in order just to protect their sanity or even their life, they feel they have to put distance between them and the other person. I completely respect that and understand it, but it didn't work that way with us.
Yeah, after your band days with Jimmy Somerville and the Communards and all of that, I was interested to read that you actually converted to Catholicism, you know, for a period of time, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did sort of nearly 10 years as a Roman Catholic. I mean, I grew up in the church. I was a chorister in an English public school when I was a kid, so I kind of grew up with that stuff. But when religion got serious for me at the end of my 20s, it was very much Roman Catholicism that drew me. And I did 10 years as a Roman Catholic before I realized that I was actually Church of England after all and sort of made my way back. But I've got the greatest respect for, you know, some of my best friends, as they say. I think there's something about it that I sort of get in a very profound way.
And did the Catholic attitude towards same-sex marriage, did that influence you all in going back home?
Oh, no, I mean, the Anglican attitudes to same-sex love are no better, really. It's just they've worked out in a different way. So, I mean, it's never been a problem for me in the sense that I've never doubted for a second that God has no problem at all with gay people. That's never been an issue for me I've ever even really had to think about. It's the church that has the problem. And again, that's a painful reality that you have to find a way of living with. And I tried to protect me and David from that, really. And I don't know how successful I was because it's very hard to fight on lots of fronts simultaneously, but we did try and preserve in our lives a part that was just for us and we could, you know, be together and not feel that we were having to fight church doctrine or be representatives or all that other stuff that comes with it.
For most people, the vast, vast majority of people, when they lose somebody and they're in this time of grief, they can grieve privately. But for you, you have to grieve publicly. How has that been?
Well, yes and no, because David died, and then it was a very sort of public thing because it was reported on the news, and then also there was a whole kerfuffle over. I got some very hostile letters from people who were not sympathetic. But then lockdown happened in England, and so I found that, I mean, grief itself is a sort of lockdown, but then that was enforced by a big public lockdown. So like lots of people, I found myself on my own at home. And in some ways that was really tough because, you know, you need your handholds in normality to get you through a tough experience like that. But on the other hand, I think it was quite good for me because what I do is throw myself into work. And actually I had to just sit at home and confront the reality of what had happened. And that takes time.
And you say there you got terrible letters. Like what? And how did that affect you?
Oh, letters from people who, one letter began, "I can't tell you how glad I am to read of your partner's death." People who thought that David was roasting in hell and that I should follow. So the kind of mad letters from people.
Homophobic, was it?
Yeah, crazy homophobic letters. And those don't hurt, really, because you just think, well, you know, you just wonder what's going on in the dysfunctional mind of the person who writes them. But there were a couple of letters from people. There's one from another Anglican priest who said that while he thought it was very sorry, that sad that David had died, I should in no way consider myself a proper representative of the church. And I thought, why are you telling me this now? What kind of failure of sympathy or basic pastoral skill has, is happening there?
Well, nothing very Christian about that. Come here. Do you know, I was watching Graham Norton recently on his show, and he was kind of chastising us, you know, on the chat shows in this country for the way we'll always latch on to any thread of an Irish connection. You know, the way when we have a Hollywood actor or a famous singer like yourself, we'll say, do you have any Irish connections? As if we're looking for some sort of pat in the head. So I'm going to ask you that now. You do, of course.
Well, I do. I'm a member of the Bars. I am a supporter of St Finn Bars, and I know you were just talking to Orla about GAA, and I'm a big fan of well, particularly football, actually, and I'm just discovering hurling, but this is a recent thing. But I have deep roots in Cork City and County, and I've got lots of family in Ireland, and I cannot wait to get to watch a game.
Well, yeah, well, neither can I, but obviously there are other people who think that they're more, you know, that there are more important things, and people are right about that as well. But have you seen a game live? It was normal people that attracted you to the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, I've never seen a game. I was watching normal people out the corner of my eye, and I thought, that's the worst handball I'd ever seen. And then I realised that they were meant to pick it up. And then I just got sort of into it. And then, you know, lockdown happened, and like everybody else, I was on YouTube, and fortunately I found my way to lots of Gaelic football, and actually I have an ancestor who played a very big role, Standish O'Grady, in the Celtic revival, so I've actually kind of got roots in it, although I didn't know about that until quite recently.
So you're an honorary member, although they might be looking for the membership fee now, of St Finbar's, as you're saying, the Bars there in Cork, and an official member. And in football, in soccer, who's your team?
Well, I'm an Arsenal fan because I lived in North London for many years. But I'm also a fan of Chorley Football Club, which was where David was from. And David's brother, Mark, I'm probably not meant to say this, but he is Victor the Magpie, which is the mascot for Chorley FC.
And you get on great with David's family. And I do know it was a very tough subject to discuss in the book about his troubles and his fight with alcoholism, but that was with their full blessing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was difficult. I mean, you know, you want to protect the memory of the person you loved, and having to admit that everything in his life was not easy was a difficult thing to do. But actually, it's on the death certificate, and I looked at the death certificate, and his cause of death was chronic decompensated alcoholic liver disease. And I thought, well, it's out there. Anyone cared to have a look, they could find out. But also, there is a deadly silence around addiction, because it's a difficult thing, impossible thing to talk about with the addict, because it's one of the ways they preserve their addiction, is by pretending it's not happening. But that can be really harmful to people. And I thought, David is no longer with us, so that discussion can't hurt him now. But the deadly silence can and continues to hurt people. And if you can find a way of getting a grip on that, talking about that, that might be a good thing.
Well, Richard, you've had a busy morning on the airwaves in the UK and now here in Ireland as well. I want to thank you very much for joining us. And I didn't even get next or near talking to you as I did want to about the Communards, but we'll do that some other time, maybe when you're over here for the reopening of matches and travel and all of that. It'd be great to have you in studio. It'd be brilliant.
Thanks,
and the very best
of
luck. Good to talk to you. Great. The Madness of Grief, A Memoir of Love and Loss by Richard Coles was published this week. Richard Coles there in London. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.